Craig Hoffman.
If you just try to pick something off of the entire Cheesecake Factory menu, you're screwed. Second and seven is chicken. Okay, three wide receivers, one tight end. Okay, and now it's chicken and rice. And like, yes, all of a sudden, you're at like three dishes.
The Hoffman Show.
That is the best analogy I've ever heard.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
On a P-Funk, take command. It's almost Friday, Thursday. What up? What's happening? Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Day four from the quarantine cave. I feel like we got a nice little rhythm going. Anthony, I even have it on the board today.
Yeah, I almost pooted on this stuff.
You know, we're fully loaded. We're ready to go. We got a good one, as always. And also, it's football day. Anthony, are you watching preseason football tonight?
Craig, what kind of question is that, man? Of course I am.
You definitely don't live with a significant other.
Well, the thing is, so my girlfriend just got out of quarantine, and she's going to be making dinner for me tonight. And I told her I'd come over to her crib. You want to know why? Because it's Thursday night football. So every Thursday, I set the precedent. Every Thursday night, we're going to watch football together because she's not a huge sports person.
Okay, so, I was going to ask, is she a big sports person
Not at all. Not even close.
Okay.
She'll go to sporting events, but she won't necessarily understand everything that's going on. She'll be asking a billion questions. And me, when I'm at games, I just want to sit there and watch the game. I don't want to be, you know, bothered by all these types of questions and what's the red zone.
You brought her. You gotta man up. You gotta just take that and be ready to answer her questions or just be like, hey, that's a little complicated. I'll tell you in a second. Wait for a timeout. You gotta learn game management, Anthony. Come on.
That's what the preseason is for. So I'm gonna rev her up. I'm gonna get her primed and ready for the regular season so she's not asking me all these questions. She's not asking me what's a field goal. She's not asking me what the red zone is. She's not asking me why Carson Wentz is inaccurate. She'll just know.
The answer there is his lower half is very inconsistent. Like, so his feet. They're a little choppy. He tends to understride a little bit and drop backs. Guys rush. You know, he's got people in his face. Those men are very large. They're trying to hit him. If they were coming after me, I also probably would be sped up a little bit. But they don't pay me to play quarterback. What was your question again? That's what you got to do. I think I'm going to watch a little bit tonight.
Okay.
Because do I care about anything beyond the starters for the Giants and Patriots or the Ravens and the Titans? No. Frankly, I don't care about anything in the Ravens and the Titans. And I only care about Patriots-Giants because it's Dable's debut in New York, and it's a divisional opponent. So I care about that for work purposes. Preseason football's terrible. Like, some people, like, I don't like, I should reword this. I should, to follow my own rules from the food game, not yuck someone's yum. If you like preseason football, more power to you. And in the same way that, like, I don't like watching college basketball because I don't think the product's very good. And objectively speaking, I'm right. Objectively speaking, it's not high-quality basketball. But it's quality enough that some people enjoy it. Obviously, there's emotional attachment. There might be other reasons. If you're betting on preseason games, then, like, more power to you. Or I hope you have the power because otherwise you have a gambling problem and I'm not making fun of that. Like, there's hotlines for that. You know, there is a – you know, you could be doing research for fantasy football. Like, there's a ton of reasons why you might watch preseason football. But at the end of the day, you're getting down to players who just aren't that good by NFL standards, by what we have decided is like NFL level, by what we've invested so much in over the years as a country, that we've elevated the NFL to the level that it is. And preseason football ain't that. It's not that by design. They don't game plan. They don't put in the time. There's ulterior motives. Winning doesn't really matter. And so, unless you're Baltimore, by the way, Baltimore hasn't lost in preseason in like 8 years. I think they're going for their 21st straight win tonight. So maybe I will watch Tennessee Baltimore and just the fourth quarter. But realistically, I only really want to watch kind of like the first quarter, the starters for the Giants. That's kind of really all I want to see is like, what do they look like? Does Daniel Jones look like the same guy? Does he look a little more comfortable? Do they get the ball out? If Saquon plays, does he look sharp? I don't even know. For all I know, I'm talking out of my butt, and Dable's already announced that none of those guys are playing. But I hope that they play. I'd imagine they'd play, and I'd like to see a little bit of the Giants' offense specifically tonight. That's about all I want.
Saquon. I'm not going to lie. Also got to tap into the preseason because we have to get ready for fantasy football season, Craig. We got to see, you know, if the offense is going to be revolved around the same players. We got to see who's going to be ready for week one, who's injured, who's not. Because we're not keeping tabs on these guys every day. You know, we have one team that we primarily, you know, focus in on. So we know the ins and outs of that team, but we don't know the ins and outs of other teams. So that's also part of the reason I want to watch preseason football tonight and also this weekend. I don't think I'm going to do too much. Definitely going to dive head into just preseason football because guess what? I'm quite frankly just excited for football to finally be back. It's been a long 6 months.
I'm excited for it, but I watch it and I'm just like, it's like, did you watch the USFL or the XFL? So I guess the USFL, the XFL hasn't even come back yet.
Yeah, the USFL. So I have a couple of friends that are actually in the league. So I watched a little bit of it. But that's just who I am. Like, I'm watching Little League World Series. I watch anything sports related, Craig. So maybe I have more of a biased opinion when it comes to, you know, sports watching, but I generally watch any and everything.
Yeah, I was like, I honestly didn't watch any of the USFL. Now, also, football is not in my household beyond me. Football is not only not a preferred sport, it's kind of looked down upon. First Lady of the Hoffman Show, not a football fan. And so it was so funny, too, like watching Hard Knocks with her the other day. She's just like, this is such a silly game. This is such a dumb sport. And there are parts about it where I'm like, you're right. We all love it, but you're right. We love it's our dumb sport. So you be nice to our dumb sport. But I think that, like, yeah, I will admit, like, personally, I would rather watch basketball any day of the week than football. And I'd prefer to watch, like, people that I'm invested in. You know, I have teams that I root for, players that I know, whatever, in certain leagues, certain sports that I'm interested in. But at the same time, I get that's my preference. You know, for work purposes, am I going to watch every snap Saturday? Yeah. Am I looking forward to it, frankly? Yeah, I am. But other teams that I haven't been, like, because at this point, I'm invested in the storylines. I'm also invested in my own predictions. Like, you know, we went through our Cam Sims Award and Rashad Ross Award nominees yesterday. Other teams have those players too. I don't know who they are. I'm not as invested. Am I invested in Armani Rogers making the team? Sure am. By the way, on today's Take Command, ran that little segment by Logan Paulson. He loved my Armani Rogers pick, except for he said he might wind up winning the Cam Sims Award. He thinks the coaches are just in love with this kid, that he might even be past Curtis Hodges and Samis Reyes on the depth chart at this point. So very interesting this weekend, by the way, to see, and we'll get into some of this coming up next. And as we go throughout the show, Scott Jackson with us the back half of the show, who do we want to see, you know, who will we see based off injuries and all this kind of stuff. But with Logan Thomas out, with Bates probably down this weekend, with Cole Turner down this weekend, with injuries, like, they're, for even though it feels like they have 100 tight ends, they're only down to like two or three of them. You know, it's Hodges, it's Rogers, it's Alex Arma's going to get to play some. Sam East has been battling injury, so he might be out this weekend. So all of a sudden, these tight ends that we've been talking a ton about, like, we're going to get a lot more data. If you were like, hey, I have $1,000 for you, if you could tell me the same kind of interesting position group for the Giants, I'd be like, good for you. You get to keep your $1,000. So I think the storyline part of it is always fascinating to watch in the preseason, as you get to know guys and know their stories a little bit. But you just can't do that for all 32 teams, 90 guys across. Doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the football. Doesn't mean you can't, if you want to get out your BetMGM app, you can't have a little fun that way. You can find a way to get invested. Football's back tonight, and I'm definitely going to watch some of it. I'm definitely going to check in a little bit. Patriots, Giants, Titans, Ravens, the two games, 7 and 7:30 respectively on the kickoff times. As for what else is still to come.
Still to come on the Hoffman Show.
Scott Abraham, he's doing workout in Ashburn. He sat down with Carson Wentz today and asked him straight up about the inaccuracy and how much it's bothered him to hear that narrative. You'll hear Carson Wentz's answer to Scott's question next. You'll also hear from Manish Shroff. He is the play-by-play voice of the opponent this weekend, the Panthers. Not that we're super interested in them, but might as well check in, get in our game week rhythm. Also, Anisha's story is a very cool one. A guy I've known for a long time, taking over that play-by-play job for the first time, his first season. So this will be his first game. Also, speaking of take command, you'll hear from myself and Logan at 4 o'clock. Kedrick Gulston, 4:30, and Scott Jackson will be in for that interview and the rest of the show. It's a good one on a Thursday. Hoffman Show on the Team 980.
The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
See no chance. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch.
Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. We'll let you hear from Carson Wentz in just a second. He sat down with Scott Abraham at ABC7. Scott asked him a pretty direct question about the inaccuracy, but this just came out literally as Anthony hit the song to come bring us out of break. So I'm going to read reaction for you live here to this, or read the details of this live. Or my ESPN app will freak out and I will not be able to read for you anything. The headline I remember, that part's easy. The NBA has announced they're going to retire Bill Russell's number league-wide, number 6. Of course, Russell passed away at the age of 88 just a few weeks ago, and the NBA has decided that he will... or that they will retire his number for the entire league. Here we go. The number retirement will be across every NBA team in order to ensure that Bill's transcendent career will always be recognized, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said in a statement. Current NBA players are already wearing number 6, including LeBron James, will be grandfathered in and continued wearing the number. Russell died in July. The statement reads in part, Bill Russell's unparalleled success on the court and pioneering civil rights activism deserves to be honored in a unique and historic way. Permanently retiring his number 6 across every NBA team ensures that that transcendent career will always be recognized. The NBAPA, their executive director said, this is a momentous honor reserved for one of the champions or the greatest champions to ever play the game. Bill's actions on and off the court throughout the course of his life helps to shape generations of players for the better, and for that we are forever grateful. We are proud to continue to celebrate, continue the celebration of his life and legacy alongside the league. So James, obviously the most notable player who currently wears 6. I don't know if anybody else in the league currently does. There's certainly nobody of LeBron's calendar because there's no one else of LeBron's caliber. Certainly, in terms of historical precedence. And how cool would it be, by the way, if the last guy wearing 6 in the entire league is LeBron? Like, that feels appropriate, especially considering this is not just happening because of Bill Russell's championship pedigree. Like, yeah, he won 11 and is perhaps the greatest winner in the history of sports. I mean, his undefeated in do or die games, game 7s, You know, the statistics in terms of what his production is when the game, the series, the title is on the line are unheard of. I mean, you're talking about like 40 or 50 rebound games. Like, the dude was incredible. You know, I think from a basketball standpoint, you can also, you know, say like, yeah, it was an 8-team league and, you know, it was a different time and all that kind of stuff as compared to where the league is now. But he's an important step into getting to where the league is now. But the thing that makes him different from the Michael Jordans, LeBron James, the Magic Johnsons, et cetera, all of whom did amazing things for the league, is Bill Russell was also a civil rights hero. He's also a civil rights pioneer. And so I don't think when Michael Jordan dies that 23 will be retired, and I don't think it should be. For as great as he was, and for, you know, even I guess there is some dispute on whether or not he's the GOAT. You know, some folks take LeBron. You have people like who say like Kareem, Magic. There are. It's not unanimous, but in terms of the most instrumental figure of the first, you know, 30 or so years of the NBA, there's no question that it's Russell. He's just different. And that's even with Jerry West being the logo. Again, that's unofficial, but we all know. So the reason we're talking about this, if you're just tuning in, the NBA just announced about 7 minutes ago that Bill Russell's number 6 will be retired across the entire league. And just, Anthony, thinking about this, the only other guy I can think of in sports who has this is Jackie Robinson. And that feels like an appropriate comparison. I don't think there's anybody in hockey. I don't think there's anybody in the NFL. And that's fine. I think it, like, retire the 6. Nobody else can ever wear it. They can't really do one of the things that's great about baseball that they do every year is the Jackie Robinson Day, where everyone wears 42. You can't do that in basketball, though. Because it'd be like, yeah, we got a foul on number 6.
Yeah. That will be a little crazy.
We got foul on 6. Yep. You guys really are really hacking it up today. We got a foul on 6.
Maybe they wear a patch.
Yeah. No, there's something
like that.
Maybe you do it so like one guy gets to wear 6.
Mm.
You know, and it can be like an honor. It's like, no. You, like LeBron, obviously, you know, he's the guy that I would pick, but he's already wearing 6. So like once everybody that's being grandfathered into this is out, you pick like a Bill Russell award nominee for a particular game. That guy gets to wear 6, and you know, he'll like address the crowd before the game, talk about Bill Russell, and it's a way to keep the legacy alive. Because that's the thing, is like, in a way, like LeBron wearing 6 makes you think of Bill Russell. So in order to retiring a number to keep it alive, involves some element of doing something to actually keep it alive. And so, you know, whether it's something like that where they pick a game every year and one guy gets to wear it for one day on Bill Russell Day, whether they and having it be similar to baseball and Jackie Robinson, whether it is, you know, some other thing that they do. And they obviously have the Bill Russell Finals MVP each and every year. So like they've already got something that will continue to commemorate him. And the Finals MVP is so appropriate because of his championship pedigree, because he's a guy that was, you know, a Finals MVP in every sense of the word before they probably even had the award, is appropriate. So I think it's important, though, to not just remember the winning and say, like, this isn't about just the winning. It's about the champion he was for civil rights, the life he led as a black man in Boston in the 60s, and even though he was this great winner and revered within the sport, his house was vandalized and burglarized like frequently. He dealt with racism that would seem unimaginable to most of us who have been alive in the last 30 years of America, even though certainly there's plenty of racism to go around still, but the kind of in-your-face vile racism that even people who, you know, might say we're in a post-racial world would be like, oh, no, that was racist. Whether we are or not is different discussion for a different show. But like the old school, old fashioned stuff was what Russell dealt with often in Boston. Nevertheless, some of the underlying systemic issues that he helped fight, and not only as a player, is a very forward facing civil rights activist with guys like Muhammad Ali, you know, being front and center, Jim Brown being front and center to secure rights for folks that look like him, not just in places like Boston, but all across the country. And that fight, that advancement for black folks and people of color in this country, and the doors that he opened in the NBA, even as the first black coach, where he won championships and was effective and left the door open for those behind him. That's why Six gets retired league-wide. It's not just, yeah, he won 11 championships and he was the best player on the court for all of them. It's he was a man of unimpeachable character. He was a man who looked out for the generations that followed. He was the kind of guy that consistently spoke highly of the game as it continued to get farther away from him in terms of, you know, he got older in life. He's not just like, oh, back in my day. Although he did have the, I would have kicked your ass at that Hall of Fame speech. So he never lost the competitive edge part of it. But he had respect for the game as it grew. And not all the old timers had that. And so a couple weeks, or actually a couple months at this point, after his passing at the age of 88, the NBA announcing again about 15 minutes ago, if that, that they will retire number Six all across the league. We'll continue to get reaction on that news, and we'll definitely talk about it with Scott. I wanted to hit some NBA stuff with Scott later in the show anyway. Of course, Scott Jackson, huge NBA guy. I've been covering the Wizards and everything NBA for years. So we'll talk to Scott about that later in the show as well. Up next, Anish Shroff, play-by-play man for the Carolina Panthers. And then I promise you'll hear from Carson or you would hear from Carson Wentz, the exchange he had with Scott Abraham. That'll come up at 3:45 before Not My Beat at 4. This is the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.
The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, and we're always live on the free Odyssey app. And it is my pleasure to welcome in the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers, Anish Shroff. And Anish, it gives me great pleasure to say that as someone who grew up in the Carolinas. Mick Mixon, who you are replacing, is someone I consider a mentor and a friend. And when Mick was retiring, I was like, I wonder who's going to get the job. And the fact that it's you, a guy I've also known for a long time, has been so good to me over the years. And obviously, you've made Charlotte home working for ESPNU for as long as you did and all the stuff that you've been doing. I couldn't be more excited for you, buddy. So congratulations and you know, welcome to the show to talk about your new team.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and congratulations to you. I know you got a big summer, new job, great slot here with the Drive Time, and you're getting married. So we both have a lot going on here these next few weeks.
Yeah, to say the least. I'm curious real quick. We don't need to make this like biography in each time, but I am curious, and yes, I saved this question. Instead of for us catching up off air, I'm saving this for on the radio. Like, what was it like when you got the news that you got the job, having lived in Charlotte now for the better part of a decade, making it home, and, you know, also, frankly, replacing a guy like Mick, who is a legend down there?
You know, the first thing was it was just so much different than when I got the job at ESPN, in the sense that, you know, I was much younger when I got the job at ESPN, and you're always kind of looking ahead and what's next. And I was at the stage of my life where you can have gratitude and humility and really grasp what it means. It's one out of 32. It's an NFL team. It's the most popular sport in North America. It's the most popular sport in the Carolinas. So to have that opportunity and then to succeed a guy like Mick, who I just spoke to him a couple of days ago, is one of the nicest human beings on the planet. And despite all the you know, the talk about the big shoes to fill and all that, I know what I'm walking into. The great thing about Mick is the advice that he gave me, and he just said, be yourself, be you, And he said, I'm going to kind of leave you alone. Like, I don't want to be that guy hovering over you. And the one thing that he offered me was friendship. And he's like, you need anything? Pick up the phone, call me anytime. He reiterated that to me when I talked to him a few days ago. So he's been great. But really just gratitude. You know, if you know anything about my background and my story, you know, the one thing that I always wondered was, you know, would people take a shot at me at a higher level because of my name? And it's been this disqualifier at times in my career. And so for an NFL team to say, like, this guy with an ethnic name, like, we don't care, we want to make him the voice of our franchise, you know, that means so much to me. So I'm grateful to the Panthers and just kind of humbled by the opportunity, really, more than anything else.
Yeah, that's very cool, man. Congratulations. And I just thought of this story, so I will tell it quickly. The last time I saw Mick was before a Monday night game here a couple years ago. And Mick introduced me to someone as, oh yeah, Craig could take my job one day, which I wasn't interested in play-by-play. But that someone happened to be Luke Kuechly, and Luke then turned to Mick and went, do I need to kill him? And luckily, Mick said no. And so I was just, I guess I should follow up by saying, has anyone threatened your life since you took Mick's job, or did Mick bless and warn all of the right people? Because that would be true friendship.
Yeah, no, like Mick has been so cool about this, and he, you know, keeps lying and saying all these nice things about me. So every radio show I go on, it's, oh, Mick said all these great things about you. So I appreciate him, you know, lying through his nose, you know, to make sure I've got a pretty nice on-ramp here. So they've rolled out the red carpet. The fans have been great. The people in the organization have been great. And Mick's been awesome.
That's great, man. Anish Shroff, play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers, with us, of course, ahead of week one of the preseason, Commanders and Panthers this weekend. So I'm curious about this. Obviously, you are in your first season, as we've been talking about, but like, does Ron Rivera's presence still loom down there at all? Like, how often does his name come up, or is the franchise considering all of the turnover, including, I mean, Tepper was there and he's ultimately the guy who moved on from Ron, but there has been a lot of turnover down there. Has the franchise kind of moved on from him, and is it even a story that they're playing him in week one?
You know, it's less of a story because they did play last year in the regular season, and this is right. Preseason. Obviously, you know, the stakes aren't that important, and who wins and loses is not that important, and we probably won't even see a lot of the guys who will play meaningful reps in the regular season. But, you know, you got to remember the one thing about Ron. When he was in Charlotte, he was very visible in the community. I used to see him at charity events and, you know, this charity auction and this function. He was everywhere. He was the guy who was not just the coach of the Panthers. He was in the community, shaking hands, kissing babies. He was that guy. And in some ways, it's a little unfair to Matt Rhule, who took over in 2020 when the world was shut down. And for right. 2 years, Matt never had that chance to connect the way Ron did. He's sort of finally getting that opportunity here, you know, in the last 6-7 months, really the off season and now the lead up to this, where he can engage people and people can get to know him. So, you know, people love Ron here. Obviously, when you go to a Super Bowl and you have the success that he did, but you remember this. I mean, you're a Carolina guy. Go back to Ron's first two seasons. Ron Rivera going into season three wasn't viewed the way Ron Rivera is now post tenure with the Panthers. He had, you know, missed the playoffs his first two seasons, and people were wondering, is this the guy? Could he do it? You know, they got things rolling. A few years later, they're 15-1 and playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, obviously, story in every camp to a point is quarterback. It's particularly heightened for you guys down there between Baker and Sam Darnold. How have you seen this battle playing out, and who will we see on the field on Saturday?
You know, I'll find that out from Matt Rhule when I speak to him later today. So they haven't decided how the reps will work out. I can tell you this, it's been pretty much 50-50 with the first team, with Sam and Baker. And this is a new offensive system. They brought in Ben McAdoo, former head coach of the Giants, to run the offense. So Sam Darnold had a head start here. Sam Darnold had the spring. He had OTAs. He had mini camp. Baker Mayfield got the playbook less than 3 weeks before training camp started. And so for Baker, the first week and change, you could tell there was maybe a little bit more hesitation and still learning the playbook, still learning some of his receivers. Sam had that head start. I will say in the last week or so, Baker seems to be making exponential strides daily. He's decisive. He's picking up the playbook. And when Baker's in the huddle, we know this just from who he was at Oklahoma and who he was at Cleveland and who he was in high school in Texas Tech. You know, there's an energy. There is this aura that he brings to the huddle. Guys seem to play off of that. And that's not a knock against Sam in any way. Sam is the incumbent. It's also not his personality. He's more reserved. He's more quiet. But Baker brings a little bit of that attitude that's kind of been missing from that position since Cam Newton was in his prime.
Yeah, I remember we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, like Baker at the Senior Bowl and that, you know, that kind of gumption that he has. How has that translated to the DJ Moores of the world, to Christian McCaffrey? Like, how have the other guys that have been there that are really high-level weapons responded to that, those two different personalities, for better or for worse?
I'll give the players credit, because every time they get asked about that, they sort of plead the fifth or give you the non-answer. None of them really want to get involved into, hey, we may be perceived to be lobbying for one guy over the other, and you know, the message has been clear. This thing's going to play out. Somebody's going to have to win the job. But the guys that you mentioned, I think it's important if McCaffrey can stay healthy, if DJ Moore, who I think is one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL, you know, continues on his trajectory, if Robbie Anderson can bounce back, a guy like Rashard Higgins, who played with Baker in Cleveland, maybe he can be your third or fourth wide receiver. They expect big things from Terrace Marshall if he can get healthy. And the offensive line, which was a huge issue last year, is much better. So there is better infrastructure around the quarterback. And I've told people, you know, the Panthers, to be a much improved team, don't need Baker or Sam or whoever it's going to be a top five or even a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. They can be middle of the pack. That represents a massive upgrade from last season, you know, when the Panthers, you know, only had 36 passes of 20 or more yards all season. They were 31st in passing touchdowns, last in completion percentage. So they had some of the worst quarterback play in the NFL last year. If you can go from that to, you know, 15 to 17 in that range, that represents a massive upgrade.
Anish Shroff, play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers, with us. McCaffrey being great is something they probably need. What's his status health-wise, and how do they plan to use him? Because it feels like he was almost overused at times, and that maybe contributed to some of the injuries and also a lack of effectiveness as you just accumulate all those hits, all those reps, time after time in the NFL. So what's the plan with McCaffrey, and where is he from a health standpoint going into the season?
I got to tell you, he has looked unbelievable. He has looked unbelievable in camp. And when you see him against all these guys who are pros, he's just a dude who's at a different speed. You know, it's like you're watching a different species, making guys miss. The cuts are back. Obviously, keeping him healthy is important. One of their big free agent signings was Deontay Foreman. So he can take the load off McCaffrey in those short yardage situations, second and two, third and one. You get inside the 5 yard line. You know, now you're saving some bullets for McCaffrey later in the season. Upgrading the offensive line. I remember on draft night when Ikem Ekwonu was drafted with the sixth pick. We're in our draft studio with Jonathan Stewart, former Panthers running back, and he says, you know, this will add years to Christian McCaffrey's career. You know, getting this kind of offensive line where now you're not having to break tackles in the backfield and you've got holes to run through, which wasn't the case last year. So I still think McCaffrey, again, when he's healthy, he's a top five player offensively in this league. He does things that guys just don't do. You don't have running backs, you know, with 100 receptions, with 1,000 yards receiving, and then what he can do on the ground. So, you know, you don't want to neuter him completely. Maybe there's less of a load, but I still think he'll be used in the same way. They may just mix in a little bit more Chuba Hubbard, a little bit more Deontay Foreman in situations that call for it. But you want McCaffrey on the field.
Yeah, definitely. And Stewart, part of a great running back tandem for sure, back with D'Angelo Williams back in the day. Last guy I'll ask you about, a familiar face that actually came up in the news here this week because he did not get along great with former now defensive line coach Sam Mills III, and that's Matt Ioannidis. How has Ioannidis looked in his first year in Carolina after leaving Washington in the offseason?
You know, he's going to start on that defensive line. He gives you an element of pass rushing ability and run stopping ability. A couple of years ago, I think he had about 8 or 9 sacks. So yep. He's fit in. He's a former Temple guy. He knows Matt Rhule. He played for Matt Rhule in college. So there is a very good fit here. And this is a D line with Derek Brown now going into his third year. They're expecting him to take a step. You know, Brian Burns is right on the cusp of having that breakout season. He's had 9+ sacks 2 years in a row. They do have to maybe find another pass rusher to complement Burns, but I think they're looking at different ways to do it. And Ioannidis is going to be counted on to rush the passer as a D-tackle, but also the Panthers, as good as they were against the pass last year, struggled at times against the run. He helps you there as well. And again, the familiarity with Matt Rhule is a win.
Definitely. Anish Shroff, play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers. Congrats again, man, and hopefully we can find another excuse to talk sometime soon.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate you.
The Hoffman Show. Here we go. Light it up. On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Well, I collapse. I'm spilling these raps long as you feel them. To the day that I drop, you'll never say that I'm not killing them.
Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. By the way, there's another pretty prominent number 6. We were talking about the Bill Russell story. The NBA is going to retire Russell's number league-wide. Kristaps Porzingis wears 6 for D.C. So Porzingis will also be grandfathered in and will get to keep that number. I think the way it'll work is as long as he's in D.C., like if you have 6 for your team right now, you get to keep wearing it. So if he were to get traded or sign somewhere else, like I feel like you'd probably lose that. Although I wonder if they eventually have to deal with it with LeBron, if he goes like back to Cleveland or something. Although I feel like if he went back to Cleveland, he'd probably wear 23 again. I don't know. LeBron, I feel like, can get whatever he wants. But we'll see. Anyway, the point is, Porzingis, Chris Miller said that he will continue to wear 6. C. Mills tweeting that out just a few minutes ago. All right. As promised before that news broke, Carson Wentz sat down with Scott Abraham today. Scott was on the show yesterday, by the way. He was great. At this point, you can't get it in the rewind function of the app because we're over 24 hours away, but that's okay because we have a podcast and you can get it there. Scott was great talking about a lot of things, including his propensity for asking direct questions like the one he asked to Curtis Samuel. And he sat down today with Carson Wentz and asked another direct one. He's basically like, look, you've been inconsistent during camp. That's what people are saying. Is it true? And if so, why? And here's what Carson said.
There's been kind of a narrative out there here in training camp that you've been a little inaccurate on your throws. Consistently inconsistent has been a kind of a terminology. How would you assess your performance in training camp? And is that characterization fair?
Yeah, I mean, for one, it's camp. You know, I think I didn't know that, so thank you.
Yep. But I know you told me you don't read that stuff.
At the same time, I'm my biggest critic. So I come back after practice, yeah, and I'm kicking myself over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plays, you know. But at the same time, they're usually things we can learn from. They're usually like, okay, this is what I was seeing. This is what I was feeling. Then go talk to the receiver. Hey, Terry, what were you feeling on that one? Maybe shutting it down in that zone or ripping through that zone, different things that opens up conversation. So, you know, I'm definitely bummed when I miss them, but at the same time, let's use them as learning opportunities because it is a lot of our first time together. You know, there's been OTAs, there's things, but a lot of it is new, and the more or less live reps against our defense, just seeing things differently. So trying to be as clean as I can be. It hasn't been perfect by any means, and I can continue to get better, and I will. But at the same time, I try not to beat myself up over it and just say, hey, how can we learn from it so that it doesn't happen the next time, but especially on Sundays this year.
Interesting answer from Carson, but ultimately I think predictable and correct. It's camp. Like the how dismissive he is of like it's camp is actually kind of great. And as a reminder to all of us that it's August 11th and we haven't even played a preseason game yet. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have concerns. And it doesn't mean that some of the concerns that we have aren't valid. What it does mean is that if you're writing Carson Wentz off at this point, you are writing him off very early. And I would say too early. And I hope that's consistent with what you've heard on the show. And I'm not trying to like talk out of both sides of my mouth here, because I'm someone who said I have a lot of questions. Have I also very consistently said we also don't know, it is early, and we could be in for a very pleasant surprise? Yes. I'm not ruling out Carson Wentz playing well. It's just hard to rule out something going sideways when we're talking about the guy who's been the least accurate quarterback in the league the last 2 years. When you see some of the mechanical deficiencies that he has had, when you see balls hitting the ground on air. But at the end of the day, it is training camp, and we're still fairly early in this process. And you know, the guy that he looks the most comfortable with is the guy he's got the most reps with. And the guy that he looks the least comfortable and confident with, in Terry McLaurin, is the guy that missed OTAs. And so if early in the season he's continuing to find Jahan Dotson, okay, cool. Can he find Terry too? Yeah, hopefully by week one, that's enough. If not, by week two or week three, that they've had enough reps and they're out there in the games, they've had enough film study, and they've been able to get on the same page. Clearly not being here in the spring hurt them. And I think that is something that's not on Terry. It's not on Carson. It's on the organization. Why on earth were you waiting so long to get stuff done on Terry's contract? And why did you allow him to miss that time? Because he would have been here if he was under contract. So what was the holdup in getting that done? With that said, it is still camp. So concerned, not really. I mean, concerned, yes, but I would say this. And then I think I finally, after how many days are we into training camp? Like 14, 15 days. I think I finally kind of have the way to put it. I want to put it. I am concerned, but I am no more concerned than I have been the whole time. Like, when they traded for Wentz, I was like, I have concerns. And just like it's only training camp, and if he was killing it, we'd still probably be like, we need to see it in a game. Just because he struggled, or in the last couple of days, it's gotten better. Like, in that way, it's like, that's the biggest data point. Is like, okay, we're actually getting improvement. Like, that's good. But it's improving to the point that he's going to be up and down. Like, okay, he's not going to be a total bust. That's good. But never really realistically thought he was going to be. Even if we had like a bunch of bad days in a row, and people were starting to get a little antsy. Like, you want to see it. Okay, now we've seen it. But that's the Wentz experience. And that's the hardest part on all of these kinds of things with a quarterback like this, is like, he's going to be good enough often enough that he makes you believe in him. And he's going to be bad enough often enough that he's going to drive you nuts. And that's who he is. And he's never going to be consistently one or the other until his skill diminishes and he just can't play anymore.
I mean, I'm glad you've, accepted it, because I have already. Again, I got to see him last year in Indianapolis. Big Coach fan, because one of my friends played for them. But now that he's here in Washington, I've gotten to see it up close. I've gotten to see it on consecutive days, him be consistent, him be inconsistent. I've already come to the conclusion that is who he is. So now I'm just going to put it in the hands of the coaching staff. Again, I think they can make it easy on Carson. We don't have to, lean on him to go out there and win us every game. I think Scott Turner, he's had the realms of being an offensive coordinator for the last three seasons. It's going to be on him. We can't only put all this pressure on Carson Wentz. Yes.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Because I feel like some people, like, we talk about Carson, I was like, oh, it's all on Carson. It's like, no, it's on Carson to do Carson's mm-hmm. job. Like, we can have other discussions.
Yeah.
And these things are intertwined, but it's not like this is all on Carson. I don't think anyone's saying it is. It is on Carson to do his part, though. And, there's no play call that's inherently going to be fixed, like, terrible footwork. There's some that he might like the footwork on better than others. And I guess that's part of it. But at the end of the day, you shouldn't be taking plays out because your 29-year-old quarterback, who's an 8-year veteran or whatever he is, can't get the footwork right. Like, you gotta step it up. But it's camp, and he's still getting there. So good stuff with Scott. I'm sure that's on ABC7 tonight. All right, when we get back, not my beat, but it is kind of Logan Paulson's beat, because my boy's doing the sidelines this weekend. On Take Command, we had Lindsey Zarniak give Logan sideline advice. If you want that, you're going to have to check out Take Command on your favorite podcast app. But if you want some good football analysis from me and Logan, well, that we got for you next here on the radio.